What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 28 of Elo Punters. You know the drill here. My name is Anurag Das, and I'm here with Bob Wong and Daniel Goshal. It's been a while, boys. How's it going?
Really has been. It's been like, well, you weren't on the last podcast. That was with, that was right after the Legacy Pit. That was with Gary Wong. So I feel like the trifecta assembly has been like months.
I've literally forgotten like how to podcast. I'm not gonna lie, like Bob and I were arguing just now about like who does what in the roles, and I was like, wait, it's been way too long. Daniel, what's up, dude?
Not much, just sitting here, you know, eating goldfish, pretty much.
Goldfish are delicious.
That seems like a very Daniel snack. I can't explain why, but it just does, you know? I don't know, you can't really go wrong with goldfish, but I also feel like on the tier list like of snacks,
yeah, they're pretty I just have a box here.
Okay. Would you consider it like an S tier snack?
I'd probably put it pretty low. It's just like crackers with cheese. It tastes like crackers that are cheesed a bit.
Well, I feel like the cheesiness makes them like kind of addicting. All right, here's a question. Would you ever eat like non-normal goldfish, like with a flavor?
Hell yeah.
Yeah, but I'm not a doctor, so I don't know if it'll kill me or something. That's what you have to ask a mom about and stuff. How bad it is.
I was actually just thinking, what even is like an S tier snack? Like for me, you're not going to believe it, but I think like regular plain potato Lay's is just like S tier for me. Like that shit is like,
ew, I don't eat regular flavored or original flavored things. Like if it's original flavored, I just don't eat it. I need spice.
Oh, spice is good too. Yeah. Spice is good too. I don't know. What else is an S tier snack?
I mean, like a prepackaged thing that you buy.
Something like that, yeah. Like
just
it could
Google
be like
S-tier snack and see what comes up.
Wait, you can't do that. Dude, this is a personalized, customized question. Also, I'm streaming this right now, and Eli Goblin Lackey 1 says Cheez-Its, which is it's
they're
up there.
Basically flat goldfish. How is that any different?
No, they're different. Dude, Cheez-Its have like a little bit more salt, and the texture is different, and like wait, you're just, okay, I'm clearly speaking to the wrong person here if you think Cheez-Its and goldfish are just the same thing. What the heck? All right, magic. Let's get into it. All right, you know the drill here. At the beginning of every episode, I want to say thank you to our new patrons. We have Alex, Jacob, Christopher Robin, Toos, Morton, Mophistopheles, nice, Ashford, Brayden, John, and Manuel. Thank you so much for supporting this content. I'm glad that you appreciate it. Glad that you are appreciating what we put out here, although it's been a while for me, it's been a while for us. What do we have on the Patreon as far as updates go? Bob, it looks like you've got something.
Yes, I put a Affownity, aka 8cast, aka artifact deck, whatever you want to call it. I put a little sideboard guide. I top forward a Legacy qualifier a couple weeks ago, so I think the deck is really good. I definitely saw you talking on the stream about it. It definitely crushes control, so it's not necessarily a matchup I'm targeting to beat right now, but it's nice to have a really good matchup in your books. And yeah, it seems like you have to play some like pretty specific hate cards to stand a chance.
I too have top four to PTQ recently, and it was I think I got knocked out by that deck in the PTQ. That deck is like something else, man. Is really scary. Dude, the thought casts and the thought monitors, it's just like you just draw so many cards. And I think what you told me sort of sits true with that is that if your opponents just do not have like dedicated hate for it, you just roll them. You know, you just like you're able to draw so many cards that once you set up your like base infrastructure, it's just like so good. But
you can have clunky draws sometimes. Sometimes you could lose to Wasteland from Delver, or sometimes, like, you know, if you don't draw the right cards, you can lose to combo. But it is a very good deck, and it definitely, I think the metagame needs to adjust to it, and I'm not sure that it has yet.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, I think in the upcoming weeks, we're going to see one very, very big event that is Eternal Weekend, and I think this is kind of a controversial event, you know, which is kind of weird to say, because Eternal Weekend has historically been, like, the premier like Legacy event outside of like Grand Prix and things like that. And this year, I think the exhaustion is finally kicking in. We'll get into that a little bit later, but otherwise, what have you been up to? You and Daniel both, what have you all been doing?
I'm probably going to put a Pioneer Cyborg guide soon for Phoenix. Is it Phoenix?
Ooh.
And stuff.
Nice. I saw you've been crushing the challenges. Did you win anything big?
Not big recently, but it's been going decently in the challenges. So try and keep that going.
Yeah, good enough. That's pretty good. We also have a new set that has come out, not Midnight Hunt, but Crimson Vow is coming out like in a week or something like that. I don't even know if it is out yet. These sets come out so fast nowadays, I just have no idea.
I think it comes out in 2 days on Magic Online. So the full spoiler is up, which we are going to briefly discuss as our first topic. But yeah, before we get there, what have you been up to? Anything in particular?
Dude, I'm trying to think what I've been up to. Like, I've obviously been like streaming. Oh, I talked about this earlier on stream today. I got an espresso machine. Dad, this is like the greatest thing that I've ever bought. Something about just like tweaking and tuning and like, I don't know. It's like something that can... That's very easy to make into like a passion project, right? Like obsessing over like nuances that don't really matter kind of deal here. So every day in the morning, I'm just like super excited to wake up and like fire up the machine and like get some stuff here. And like the tinkering and the tankering and all that sort of stuff will take some time
Dude,
to get used
I
to.
I literally brought this up with Rugbed. I was like, what should I get Anurag and Mom for their wedding? Like, I was like, maybe an espresso machine. And then Rugged was like, Anurag doesn't drink coffee anymore. I was like, what? Like, that is not the person I knew. So.
No, so it's because, okay, so Asmo's asking, which machine did I get? I got it's a beginner level thing. I know nothing about this field. So anybody who is listening to this right now, forgive me if I like, you know, say something wrong. In fact, why don't you just correct me too? How about that? I got the Breville Barista Express, which has a grinder on the left and then like the thingy on the right, and so it all works. It's really interesting. I don't know. I feel like I have a lot to learn here. So over time I will get better. But right now, not so much. Right now it's like, but it'll get better, I'm sure. So that's what's been up for me. I'm trying to think what else, if anything.
I see you've been trying to say Eternal Weekend's controversial, maybe to push your agenda, because you know in this cast Bob got a painting, I got half a painting. That means this year you got to step it up and get maybe one quarter
dude,
of
no,
a painting.
What are you
that means Anurag is going to get a third of a painting this year.
Last year I top aided two of the three events. Two of the three events, and then flubbed. It was really bad because I think I have this like thing where like, I didn't stream it last year, right? And then as soon as I made top eight, I was like, all right, time to boot up the stream, and immediately lost to it was a brutal death. So I don't know. Every time I boot up, like I don't stream an event. And then when I make it to the finals, like the last round, I start the stream and then I just die. So I think I've learned my lesson here, which is I should just not stream at all because
it messes up the vibe.
It messes up the vibe, but then also it's kind of just like it's fun to stream high level events. Something about it, there's a lot of oomph in it, you know what I mean? Like a lot of tension. That's what we don't have in Magic nowadays, I guess. And so these events are like where we can find like, you know, like we're at the edge of our seat, what's going on kind of deal. And
I'm actually trying to think, because usually if I top eight something, usually you Skype in or Discord in or whatever, and then I also lose. I'm trying to think of that one.
Well, I mean, something about like,
did you Skype in for that one? I feel like you didn't. So like maybe no. I need to start doing that too.
Well, that's why I tell you like because I just want to watch games, right? Like how do I explain this? Like after you like get knocked out of a tournament, the only thing that I want to do afterwards is just like, get in like more competitive Magic. You know what I mean? I just want to like more. And so I'm like, okay, yeah, I'll watch Bob because there's some stakes on the line here. I just like, I can't, I don't even like talking when you're playing at this point. You know what I mean? Cause it's just like, I don't know, like listening, like getting like a lot of voices when you're playing any sort of Magic is just like, it's just like whatever. The only thing that I can listen to when I'm playing like high stakes Magic is just like dumbed down, numbed down, like beats, like techno beats or whatever that just like you can zone out and like not focus on anything but the game. And then like, you're good to go. You know what I mean? So, oh yeah, Reaple brings up a good point. Part of the reason why I did do well is because I wasn't sleeping during Eternal Weekend. So why don't we just get into it? Why don't we talk about Eternal Weekend real quick? Or do you want to do the spoilers first?
We can talk about Eternal Weekend.
Okay, cool. So like, I think the big ticket item is that if you haven't really been following along with Magic Online Twitter and things like that, we got some big news for Legacy Eternal Weekend. I put this on my YouTube channel. I put like a short 2-minute video about it. So check that out if you want the full whatever it is there. But basically Wizards said, we're not going to make any changes to the BNR list before before Eternal Weekend, and that's for Legacy and Vintage. I don't think Vintage really needs any policing, but Legacy, my God, this format is like so. I don't think anyone really has anything good to say about it, like
except DNT players probably ruining the whole format with Zalia.
Man. Oh, that's true, right? Yeah. DNT players keeping Raghavan around a little bit longer. But, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, Bob, you have strong feelings about this format?
I mean, I think we've already rehashed it a bunch of times, so I don't want to get too deep into it. But I will say, like, the lead up to Eternal Weekend, you know, people were expecting something. Because I think, you know, Blake Rasmussen from Wizards mentioned that they had been considering changes. And so then that was like, you know, I guess maybe they shouldn't say anything at all, but, you know, they did mention that. And the fact that we are not getting those changes until after Eternal Weekend really makes this feel like kind of a lame duck format. And so that's, I think, the real issue here is that, like, you know, I think Wizards already should know that people don't like playing lame duck formats. If you remember before, there were like bans and then it'd be like 2 weeks before they're effective. People hated that. This is, I see it as very similar. Like, we know something's going to change, but we're, you know, stuck with it for a little while longer for, you know, to your point, one of the most fun events of the year. So that definitely was a bit of a disappointment.
Yeah.
Especially with the fact that, like, you know, in paper, they basically, you know, banned Ren and Six, like, what, 2 weeks before the GP?
A week before Bologna.
Yeah, and that's, like, crazy because, you know, that's a real situation where you might not have the right cards to just, like, you know, pivot to any deck, but this is on Magic Online. You get a God account, so card availability is not an issue. So I really feel like, you know, they would have served the community better if they had made a change before, because then that would make this awesome hype event that, like, sets the meta. You know, you might see the meta change from one event to the other. That would be really cool, like, if there's one deck that broke out, you know. But instead, you know, we're just going to be doing the same thing we've been doing for the past 5-6 months. So it definitely, you know, sucks the air out of the room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's just like such a lack of like the problem is like, OK, here are things that I do like. Let's start with some positives so that it's just not all negativity all the time. I do like that they have been mentioning Legacy. You know what I mean? Like, I do like that they are, you know, broadcasting that, hey, in our internal discussions, we are talking about this stuff. We don't want you guys to feel like, you know, like we're just like not thinking about you, because we are, right? So that's what the Blake thing was. And then, you know, afterwards, they gave us a little bit more insight into what was going on with the tweet about no changes to be in our list. What I don't like is that, like the calculation process to get to the end there, like, what kind of judgment do you have to be like, you know what we need? You know what we need? We need more data. We need more data on top of the 6 months or whatever, however long, 5 months that we already have, that something is wrong, right? Like, because it's as if like one event is going to actually tell us like whether or not Raghavan is a problem or not. Like, we just had the showcase happen this weekend. You know, we'll talk about that more after this topic, but it just seems like the it's good that they're communicating, but now like the content of what they're saying seems to be like, how do I put this kindly? Full of shit. You know what I mean? Like, it just like, it doesn't make sense. Like, I don't understand the reason. Like you mentioned, there's no pricing issues because it's all online. You know, this is one event after 5 months of worth of data that we have. So like, what is the real reason? They're just like not satisfied with the numbers. Like, they need to, why is Eternal, like the one premier event that we get as Eternal players, like, why is that, you know, being thrown into the,
I mean, I guess in their defense, like, it is somewhat unclear what to ban. Like, it's not going to be just one card, I hope. You know, there are multiple cards, I think, on the chopping block. So, I mean, I don't think, like, I think most of the time when we talk about bans, there's like a clear consensus, or at least close to a consensus. But right now, there really isn't, outside of, you know, Raghavan number one, and then number two, number three, if there is a number two, number three, like, big question marks.
Well, I think
they're definitely,
as far as Eternal Weekend goes, it's true that they might have, you know, multiple cards they want to ban, but they could just be like, we're just going to ban Raghavan for Eternal Weekend and then use the data from Eternal Weekend to determine further bans, for example. Because I think Raghavan's one of the most, maybe you could call, unfun cards, because it just makes the games, I don't know, over so quickly, maybe. At least the other cards are more expensive, so you get to play more turns, if you see what I'm saying.
Yeah. I would
like that too.
In the letter that I wrote to Wizards, I was just like, look, this is a fluid process. You have to be flexible. You can't just be like one and done. You know what I mean? Like Watsy has historically just been like that. And I think that's like really, really just not good. You know what I mean? Like I think the BNR list needs to be something that is like constantly under scrutiny, constantly revised and tuned and tested for. And like not doing that is just like a huge oversight and a real like squandering of whatever potential, you know, that kind of tool has.
Well, I think, I mean, there could be an issue like if, you know, that BNR has become so common that like it's just like I don't know, you would feel a loss of confidence in cards, and it would just be like, you know, maybe a little bit too much. So maybe I can see, like
that shouldn't be my fault. Like if I'm losing confidence because you guys can't get your shit together, what's the problem? Me losing confidence or you guys not having your shit together? You know what I mean? Like,
well, but my point is like maybe they're just trying to do, you know, at most one ban per year.
That doesn't fly by me because like look at the past like 2 months of Magic, right? People are actively just saying Legacy sucks. I don't want to play Legacy.
The challenges aren't firing.
Yeah, 7 weeks plus in a row of Saturday challenges not firing. That's one step, right? Mm-hmm. So first of all, that should have been an easy fix a long time ago. Just make it 32 players or have adaptive payout for whatever entry. Second of all, let's talk about this. How many Eternal Weekend events are you going to play in this year, Bob?
I'm not playing in any because I like the time slots don't really work for me and I'm doing other stuff.
Right. You know what I mean? I saw a tweet that Koval, Brian Koval, Bosch and Roll is also only going to be playing in one event. Would have much rather been playing in more. I'm probably going to try and play in all of them, but I'm not really excited to do so. It's just more of like a chore almost at this point where I play Legacy. I'm a Legacy content creator, so I have to be a part of this sort of thing. You know what I mean? But like the general vibe is that this is not an event that people are going to be super happy to play in. And I mean, that is extremely alarming. Well, I was extremely alarming.
Personally, I was actually kind of excited for it because I played the Legacy PTQ last week, and I was finding it kind of fun again. But so I was kind of looking forward to some high stakes stuff. But I definitely will admit when thinking of a no Ragavan Legacy sounds much more interesting. Just I mean the way I just see Ragavan simply, it's just like a card that's kind of like. It adds like kind of like mulligan to five games, like it just like adds non-games into the tournaments randomly, and it, so if you ban it you just get rid of that. I don't know if that makes sense what I just said there, if that was articulated well.
Yeah I hear you. Yeah, no, I'm seeing like in the chat too, like Eli, Tom White, they're all saying like these are like really good players that are just like meh, you know, meh, whatever, it's Legacy. Last year like we had Oko and Dreadhorde and that was like a huge pain in the ass, and so this year it's no different. And I don't know. Speaking of no Ragavan, by the way, that is one thing that I forgot to mention is last week I did hold a no Ragavan event. It was a pretty small event. It was a free event, though. That's the number one thing. It's a free event, $600 payout. We had about 33 players in the event when it started. I was really, really happy to see some people come out and just be like, hey, like, you know, we don't like playing with Ragavan, so we're going to support this tournament that doesn't have it. We also had pretty good viewership, too, so everybody who was watching as well, thank you for hanging out here, for real. I have decided that if Wizards doesn't make action for, you know, the Legacy BNR stuff after Eternal Weekend, like within a reasonable time frame, I'm probably just going to hold, like, more of these kind of events. Like, the next one that I'd be interested in doing is a No Days tournament, which would be kind of interesting, and then we could like mess around and muck around and see like what tweaks and tunes we could make. Because the thing is like if Wizards is going to take their sweet time to like, you know, come to conclusions that most of the community can see, you know, just here, I don't see why we can't just like run our own events. You know what I mean? Like, obviously it's hard logistically speaking, like, and you know, it's expensive and things like that, but like, you know, we can't just like let this happen for so long, right? So maybe a No Days event coming up soon. We'll see how that is. And then I know Days is a card that like people are very, very contentious about. Some people love it, some people hate it, some people are like other cards. So anyways, putting that
I
out
I think
there.
That would be cool. You could challenge all the people who, you know, hate it. Yeah. And say like Delver would still be good. You'd be like, all right, you guys have to play Delver because you said that Delver would still be good without Days.
I really want to put like a bounty in. Well, I was thinking about doing that, right? So like I was thinking about like if we nerf like a Delver deck or whatever, you know, like if we have no Days in it or whatever, okay, put a bounty and be like, hey, all right, this is what it looks like. If you, the best performing Delver deck without Days will get like $100 or something, right? And that'll incentivize people to play these aggro mirrors. Obviously there's like a weird like line where it's just like, okay, well, if you, you know, people might play exclusively for the prize and then like it gets really weird because then there's an artificial amount of like decks and complications like that. But yes, I do think that that is really interesting, right? Like to see like how Delver would look. So for example, like, I mean, like what would Delver even look like?
Well, or
what
would Temple even look like? It sounds bad at first degree. I mean, that's just my intuition, just because like you kind of lose the whole payoff to playing Delver. Like you just play, there's probably a better strategy at that point. Like once you lose the payoff of days, that's my first impression. Like it seems like a,
yeah.
But
I feel
like I think you would rather play like a, you know, aggressive mid range deck, than play Delver.
Just,
but yeah,
it seems like if you try and build a Delver deck without Gaze, it seems like you're just trying to force Delver to happen rather than that it organically came about that way. That was my first impression. But it depends like overall on like if they ban Gaze, how much other stuff gets banned. Because right now there's kind of like wacky stuff like Murktide and Urza Saga and DRC that are legal that are super strong as compared to the other cards. And Uro.
Yeah. I think that's reasonable. I mean obviously like here's the other thing I'll say too, right? Is that in the No Raghavan event, guess what deck got first place? Okay, it was D&T.
Oh.
It was D&T. But second place was Delver, right? And so like even without Raghavan, like Delver is still a real deck and it's still like something you can take to a reasonable place in the metagame. So I just wonder like if you cut like Days, then what happens? Like will anybody even register the card Delver Secrets?
Well,
I doubt it.
I was thinking because for the Eternal Weekend, I was planning just to play Blue-Red Delver. And I'm like, man, if they ban Raghavan, I feel like I would do better or at least have more fun in the event. So I was like, if they ban Raghavan, it'll make me feel better about playing Delver. So I don't know what that says, but especially because one thing Raghavan, it kind of like warps the meta so that you like have to like play all these cards. Like people play like Gutshots and Blue Elemental Blast. So it feels like the deck is kind of like you don't have as much flexibility in building your deck sort of, or you're forced to play these like kind of narrow cards for one thing. And it just feels like your deck's kind of in a pigeonhole. Like the deck's not as flexible as it usually is. Among other things.
So. Yeah, no, I hear you with that. Yeah, those are really good reasons, you know what I'm saying? So, like, yeah, I think it's worth looking into, right? Because there's still, like, everybody, here's the thing, right? Everybody is, like, hypothesizing about it. There's a lot of speculation. But the real difference is, like, you can talk all you want, but when it finally comes to, like, you know, put your theory to, like, execution, there's no way to really do that. So I think these events are somewhat necessary, you know, if we want to actually, like, make progress on our own without some people at Wizards, you know, R&D, who like probably don't play the format nearly as much as the rest of us do, but you know, they do it for a job, right, or whatever it is. I mean, they're probably like overlap between like the Legacy BNR committee and the Vintage BNR committee, and like I don't know, maybe it's just like BNR as a whole. I don't actually know how that works, and I don't have any insight into that.
I mean, my ban prediction, or I don't know if that's what you meant on speculating, but my prediction would be there's just gonna be single ban in Raghavan single handedly because it seems like it would be a stretch to go after like, from their point of view, like Urza Saga or anything else really, because all those cards are kind of like more fringe within the. If that makes sense, whereas Raghavan kind of stands out, I think.
Yeah, I meant more like people are saying like, oh, if you ban Raghavan, Delver will still be the best deck in the format, and I'm just like, okay, you could say that. Now let's, you know, like you could say a lot of things, you know what I mean? So that sort of stuff. Like, what is like the spillover? What happens if you do make changes to the format? But anyways, okay, cool. I just want to put that out there that I will be running another tournament at some point in time if Wizards doesn't do anything very soon after Eternal Weekend. I mean, like, literally, like, the weekend after Vintage Eternal Weekend, I might just run an event, you know what I mean? And I might even make this, like, a regular thing until they do make changes, because it doesn't make sense for us to, like, not have a format that we enjoy when we could just, like, you know, make one up and play in that event, so... Why don't we transition to spoilers? Bob, do you have anything you want to say before we move over? Or Daniel?
Nope. I think we've, you know, beat this dead horse. And,
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know, hopefully something will happen soon after Eternal Weekend.
Cool. All right. I like that we're at the point that we're doing stuff, though. That is good. Nice.
Yeah. All right. So talking about Innistrad, Crimson Vow spoilers. Okay, before we even get to spoilers, Jarvis told me that this set is about a wedding between, like, two vampires, I guess.
Yes.
So, how do you guys feel about that?
Yeah, Olivia and Edgar.
Have they been in love for thousands of years? What's the
story?
I don't
really know too much about the lore. All I know is that, like, apparently there's, like, a caste system, like, in the vampire society, which is very... kind of, it hits real. I don't know why. I do know why, but whatever, I'm not gonna say. Anyways, and it's just like, you have like vampires of like different settings, and apparently like Olivia is like getting married to Edgar as like a powerful political play move. That's about all I learned from the 30-minute like MTG Weekly thing where they announced the first Innistrad spoilers, and that's all I know. So yeah.
Yeah,
Sugar. Ooh.
I like the art and the lore. I don't know that much about it, but I definitely like all the giant dresses and Victorian castle stuff. And I like the Halloween-y stuff in these sets.
Honestly,
Yeah,
I've
bro.
become a
These
yeah, go ahead.
vampires, they dress fancy. They dripping, dude. They look good. They look good. Oh my God. Like, I don't know if you saw the artwork for like Chandra, the what is it? Chandra Vow to Kill or something. I don't know what the card is
Dress
called. I
to
forget.
Kill.
But yeah, sure. That's styling, dude. These artists that are designing these cards, they know what they're doing. And I like that a lot.
Yeah, I like the Avabruk caretaker. I saw people were posting about it on Twitter, and I saw they were posting about the art before I read the comments, so that people were complaining it's too good and limited or something.
Wait, hold on. Anurag, just to be clear, which Chandra art do you like? Do you like the one, because there's two. Do you like the one where she's like on fire, or the one, I guess she's on fire in both. Do you want like the one where she's wearing like a medieval dress?
She's wearing the same dress in both, right? Oh no, she's not. It's a little bit different. I like the standard art one, not the alternate art one where she's like jamming. I like the where is it? It's not even
Okay.
here. Oh, why is this not even in our
No, I
discussion?
think the
She.
standard one is the one where she's jamming, and then the normal one is.
Yeah, I like the expression in the standard one, but I like the art more in the extended art one. I think like that's pretty badass. It's like, medieval and there's vampires in the
Yeah,
background.
I definitely
Just
prefer
chilling,
the
doing their
extended
thing.
art one. It looks
And I
more
will say
detailed.
one. I will say one thing too is that I feel like in the next set isn't the next set gonna be like the neon like dynasty or
Dynasty.
something? Yeah, that I feel like that's gonna be like there's gonna be some sweet art in that set as well. Just like seems like you have like the potential to do so much.
Okay, so this is what I was gonna bring up. I don't know if I was opposed to them, but I was like at least ambivalent to kind of all the extra art treatments. But one thing I will say I really like is I don't know what you call it, but it's basically, when the card also has like a different name. Like for instance, Savior of Ollenbach is Abraham Van Helsing. That's pretty badass.
Wait, is
And
that
they
a
have
real
like
thing?
Dracula and Mina Harker, who's also from Dracula. Like
Oh, yeah.
they have all these IRL characters and art, and I think like I actually do kind of like that vibe and that kind of artwork aesthetic. And I like the story that it's like using, a
Dude,
real story from real
I
life.
was scrolling down Twitter, and the best one that I saw was not related to this set, but it was Avatar Aang, and it was a picture of him just like harnessing all four elements. Omnath. That's what it was. I thought that was so cool.
Wait, but that's not a. Is that an altar or is that a real card?
No, it's not a real card. It's an altar. Like it's like a fan art or
Okay, well
whatever.
that's a totally different thing then, but I
Yeah,
mean
but
I guess somewhat
it was made in the
similar.
same vein, you know what I mean? Like it was like it had the same like it was like Avatar Aang and then like right below it had Omnath like locus of creation written in it, just like the Godzilla thing too, you know what I mean? Like it's or whatever you're talking about. Like this it was structured the same way, which is thought it was cool. Besides
I
the point.
see.
Yeah, I think whatever. I do think it's cool that they do that. I like that a lot. Yes.
Okay, cool. All right, let's get into spoilers now. There honestly aren't that many cards.
Thank
I
God. Oh my God.
am Yeah, there's not many cards I'm excited for. There is a strict upgrade to Blazing Volley, which is End the Festivities. Red sorcery deals one damage to each opponent and each creature and planeswalker they control. So basically, it's a strict upgrade. Do you think it makes a big difference? I can't think of spots that it would.
Well,
Like,
it deals one
against like
damage.
elves, it does one damage to Grist. Like, what are some other places this could even, come up?
To the face. That's one damage to the face.
Dad, that's it, dude. It's just like it just randomly changes combat map. Like, why? Why did we power creep this card? I don't understand. I mean, maybe it has like implications in the draft set, but
No,
why?
they're just making it
Why?
better because they can.
Yeah, I think it was not very good in like draft before, and now it's like probably still not very good,
Well,
but
I
at
mean,
least it
one
does good
damage
so
in
far.
Legacy can be a big difference. That's 5% of 20 life. So.
Math, dude, right there. 5% better mathematics. I get upset. Like I get upset with like the kind of power creep that is just like blatantly obvious. You know what I mean? Like this. Like
What do you mean? They're
it's just
just,
like a
they're like, it's not like Blazing Volley was ever a strong card except for in Legacy. So they're like, we can make it a bit better. You know
I don't know.
what
I get sad. I
I
get
mean, I
sad
kind
when
of
I see
like it
these
for
kind
some
of
of the
things.
cards. Like, there's a new Magma Spray that targets Planeswalkers because I've been playing a lot of Pioneer recently, and I have to play like Fiery Impulse. And I'm like, man, this card can't hit Planeswalkers. It's like a Magma Spray. Like, it's such a feel bad, man. So I like that they're just adding target Planeswalker to all this stuff. Like, all the, I like that they're adding kill a Planeswalker to all the old removal, basically. You know what I'm saying? It just feels so awkward that you couldn't do it in the old, in the days of old.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
I do kind of like the art though. Ending the festivities is just a bunch of wolves coming and killing everybody.
Who let the
So,
dog? Oh, sorry. Sorry. I take it back.
yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I mean, I guess. I don't know. I guess planeswalkers suck anyways. Like, the general community, the consensus is like people don't really like planeswalkers. I only like one planeswalker. Okay. So it's fine. Right? It's like fine. I don't care about
What?
like if you're killing like Last Hope or Teferi or Narset. Jeff, I see what you're saying here. Or like Grissom too. Yeah, it's really good against Grissom. I guess that's a big one too. The only planeswalker that I care about is Jace the Mind Sculptor. That's it.
Well, the
That's what's.
I think it's like a kind of an awkward play experience where you had like all these burn spells in the past that couldn't target planeswalkers. Like you'd have Fiery Impulse and Magma Spray, and you're like, well, I have a burn spell. It feels like I should be able to target a planeswalker, but I can't. So I like that they're adding that on. You know what I'm saying?
Well, it used to be able to, right? Like, remember, like, back in the day before they made the change? Like, remember when you, like, tick up with Chandra, Torch of Defiance and, like, hit Jace the Mind Sculptor with the two
Oh,
damage?
yeah.
And then they
Did I
erupt?
forget about that? Good you used to be able to Fiery Impulse Planeswalkers? Okay. I guess so, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. So I'm glad they made that change. But then, like, I guess in lieu of that, so maybe you're right.
Well,
Maybe
you're glad they
this
made
kind of
that
affects.
change because it made Chandra worse, probably.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I did not like playing against Chandra in that deck. But yeah, cool. But the kind of like power creep that I don't even know if I would call this power creep, which is why I'm a lot more interested in it, is the next card, which is one mana for an artifact. It's called Lantern of the Lost. I'm seeing that Eli, Goblin Lackey One, says it's going to be pretty exciting for goblins. So I don't know if you're into that. Eli, tell me why it's good, actually, because I have no idea. You maybe you'll just like catch me into it real quick, but it's a kind of a fusion of Soul Guide Lantern and Relic of Progenitus. So it says when Lantern of the Lost ETBs, exile target card from a graveyard. So that is like the Soul Guide Lantern ETB. But then the activated ability is one and a tap, exile Lantern of the Lost, exile all cards from all graveyards, then draw a card. So that is like Relic of Progenitus, being able to get rid of everything here. So I don't know. I think it's kind of interesting here. I actually, yeah, I guess it's technically like better in like corner case situations, like each of the three. Now we have Soul Guide, Lantern of the Lost, and then Relic of Progenitus. Each of these is like probably good in like unique situations, you know, like against like Uro and like Life from the Loam, for example, when there's like a stocked graveyard. I think Lantern of the Lost could be really good. I'm pretty sure that they'll come up more so in like play experience and things like that. I don't really know off the top of my head where like one would be like really much better than the other, but I don't know.
Well, yeah, Daniel, what do you think as someone who's played a lot of Relic of Progenitus in his Uro decks
Well, I'm
and
trying to read
things
this
like
to see
that?
where it would be better because Relic can just tap every turn. I mean, I guess this can target anything the first time. So it's instead of.
Yeah, that's the difference. And so I think Goblin Lackey was saying like it's much better against control because, you know, against control you really do want to draw the card, but you also want to hit the Uro immediately, and then, you know, you don't have to pay the extra mana. Whereas if you play, you know, Relic against control, then you have to immediately
Oh,
pop
yeah,
it.
true. It is kind of a lot less clunky in a way. Sometimes Relic's really clunky because you have to pay a mana just to hit the card in one hit. So, yeah, I can see this being better just because the main
Yeah.
problem with Relic is that it's so clunky.
Yeah, I mean, again, something like, you know, if they have like Delirium or whatever, like if they're trying to get their Dragon Rage Channeler active, then Relic's a little bit better because you can continually shrink their graveyard. But then if they have like one or two cards like Uro, Life from the Loam, like that, then this card's a little bit better.
Yeah,
But yeah, honestly, it's like it's close enough to those other two cards that it's just like not gonna be a big deal.
it's just like sometimes there's situations where you like express a iteration or into a graveyard hate, and it's like too expensive to crack relic because then that's like 4 mana. So that's why like Soul Guide Lantern and cards like this, where it's cheaper, can come up a lot. Because like the 1 mana is pretty huge when you're playing against like lands or Reanimator and like you barely have any mana to spend. So it could. Yeah.
Yeah, I will say this does not make sense for the Emery deck because Emery counts on Soul Guide like putting itself in the graveyard. So, you know, this card and Relic don't really work in the Artifacts deck.
Actually, I could see it being like you could have like one Soul Guide, one Lantern, You know, like some sort of like fusion, especially when it becomes relevant for Urza Saga. Like having some combination of the cards seems better now than just having like one or the other. If access to like multiple types of effects based on the situation. So I don't know.
Yeah, but my two graveyard hate pieces would be Soul Guide and Cage, and those actually hit different matchups sometimes. So
Okay, sure.
yeah,
Yeah,
you
because of
might want to go with
Emery.
this.
If you play like Emery or Lurrus, you want to cycle it.
Yeah. I
Yeah.
mean, my takeaway is all in all, this is a very reasonable card. I'm happy to see like maybe like mixing and matching, but not like you know like going like above and beyond in terms of power level, that kind of thing. Like end the festivities. Lantern of the Lost, I'm pretty happy with.
All right, next card. Shadowgrange Archfiend. This one's in the commander set. It's six and a black, so seven mana. When it ETBs, each opponent sacrifices a creature with the greatest power among creatures they control, and then you gain life equal to that power. And then in addition, it has madness, two and a black, pay eight life, and it's an 8/4.
Yeah, it's an 8/4. What the heck? It's an 8/4. Dude, I don't even own Lion's Eye Diamonds, but going LED sack, like Madness, the Archfiend into play is like. But paying 8 life is like
But
crazy.
you
I mean,
gain
you
the
gain some
life.
life on the way back, but like. This is interesting. I don't think it's actually going to be that great, but it's
I
interesting.
wish it said sack planeswalker too, so that it could troll the control players. It's the only sack creature, yeah. I mean, yeah, it definitely stands out as really powerful. An 8/4 mat.
Yeah, I'm wary of this card because of the pay eight life. Like, imagine you discarding your hand and paying eight life, and then it gets countered. So I think it like maybe has its spots. Like, if you're playing an LED deck and then you needed something to beat Merit Lodge, then this seems like a potentially a really strong option. But just the fact that you pay eight life makes me very sus on this card against, like blue decks, which is still most of the
Yeah,
format.
it's
This is not playable at all in like Reanimator, is it? Like therapy or agree or unmask yourself and then like
faceless
get
looting
into
it.
play.
Or
No, I think it's too much mana. Like maybe if you were playing like Tin Fins and had LEDs, like you definitely need LED to make this card
well, you could discard
playable.
it to well, yeah, like those unmasked type cards, or what's the other one? Grief. I don't know if grief is exile, but
Yeah, but then you still need three mana. I don't know. I
No,
don't really.
grief only targets the opponent. You can't grief yourself. That's
No,
funny.
but I mean like
That's funny.
oh, do you have to exile? Yeah, you have to exile for those pitch cards. Okay, I thought you could like grief and then discard this to grief, but I agree, it's actually
Oh my
exile.
god, if the evoke cards were discard, that would just be way too many shenanigans. There would definitely be like some crazy hollow one deck that's just like even more all in than the current
Yeah,
versions.
I mean, I wouldn't expect this card to see play in a top tier deck, but if anybody's playing like Madness decks, it looks pretty good. Like I've seen people who play like red green Madness, and so I would expect, this seems like one of the better Madness cards I've seen. So I would expect people to play those kind of decks. This would be pretty good there,
Yeah.
but I wouldn't expect it to be like the best, strategy to play in Legacy probably.
Yeah. All right, whatever. That's fine. I'm not like crazy about this card, so it's okay. Next card, Inspired Idea. Two and a blue for a sorcery. It's our first Trivenation. Draw three cards. However, it's got Cleave written on it, so that means it does two things. You can either so the cleave cost is three blue. Actually, I don't even know how to like explain this card. Like,
It's like kicker,
it's just
basically.
kicker. It's just kicker.
No, but like, how do you explain? Like, if I want to like present the card, right? Because I first of all, I'm gonna talk about cleave. Cleave is the most bullshit. Like, it's the worst. It's like the UI for this card is so bad. I really am not a fan of like the. You know, like Magic is trying to get like simpler to like attract more people. This is such a complicated, like poorly UI'd. Mechanic. So basically it says draw three cards and then brackets. Your maximum hand size is reduced by three for the rest of the game. Close brackets. And the idea is if you play the card for the cleave cost, you can ignore whatever's in the brackets. So it'd be like five mana draw three or three mana draw three and then reduce your hand size by three. You know what I mean? Like it's like a different way to get a flip card. It could have just been a flip card. Like it's just like dumb, you know what I mean? I don't know.
Well,
That's
you
just
don't get the full art in a flip card. I don't know. I thought it was kind of cool when it was clean because I was like, whoa, the brackets, you can affect the brackets. That was my, I guess, maybe e easily impressed impersonation, but I figure most people haven't been liking it. Cleave.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyways, I think this is maybe like something you'd see in like modern. Like the only card that I could think of is like, how does this card work with Reliquary Tower?
Maybe
It probably
layers?
won't.
Like whichever one
I
you play
think
first?
because you don't have a maximum hand size, then this doesn't matter. So, I mean, I guess you could try and build a reliquary tower for Inspired Idea deck, but all right, well, okay. Let's just take away the drawback. Like, how good would this card, even be? Like, 3 mana, draw three.
It's Painful Truths, right?
Yeah, but you can play.
What
It's
would that be
mono
life?
blue. It's mo like I could see this in like some sort of combo decks, like Storm or Doomsday types. That's what I was thinking. But it's
Yeah, Omnitel as well.
yeah, but mostly like in Storm because there's stuff like that where you just because Painful Truth. It's like you have to pay life. It's a bunch of colors, so on, so forth. Like you need to.
Okay. That's a good point. I'll say one thing is that like I was going through like the Legacy subreddit the other day, and someone was like, "Why is Night's Whisper so much worse than Expressive Iteration?" And I really thought about it, and it just boils down to, bruh, it's just blue. Blue is just
Well, it's
better.
also life
So
loss, it's selection.
I don't I genuinely think like the it being blue is like the best thing about it. Like the fact that you can play it in a blue deck and not have to worry about things like mana, or like you get to play it alongside the best. Like I don't know. That to me was maybe the I mean obviously like yes, you're like pondering and taking two of the best three instead of like just drawing two and losing two like matters to a degree, but I think like the color shifting was is so massively important that I
Like
don't know.
I
I
can tell
think
you, I
that
just saw an Inspired Idea deck. So you play, mo so you can di like there's ways to abuse it. Like you can discard Uro to the reduced hand size, and then you can play Mox Diamonds to quickly get cards onto the battlefield, get mana to play this. You see what I'm saying? Like a Mox Diamond Uro Inspired Idea deck. I mean, I put this here because I'm like I've never. It's like some of the most efficient card draw we've seen for its rate. And the downside is that your maximum hand size is reduced, which seems like not that hard to get around if you're playing like a. If you're building around that, it was either Mox Diamond or Big
Well,
Storm.
but the issue is like if you're gonna build a deck to like draw lots of cards, then the maximum hand size is gonna come up a lot. Versus like, you could play it in something like Storm, but then like if you play like two of these in a Storm deck, then you're not gonna have a hand for the rest of the game if you don't win. So I mean, I think it maybe makes sense in Storm because when you're going off, you're trying to win that turn. But
Well, even then, because you can like.
and I think maybe Storm isn't hurt that much by this because, they can just like play out some artifacts. So I could see it working in Storm,
Like you
but
can play out
Storm's
your
still not going to be very
Chromoxes
good.
and it's cast discard spells, but also it's just like you want cheap card draw to keep filtering. But also like the Uro kind of deck is you can just slam your whole hand into play because you slam Mox Diamond into play, slam Daxtrin or what like whatever cards you play in that deck. So it's not like you're just drawing cards to draw cards to draw cards to like slam a huge battlefield into play with Mox Diamond and stuff, and maybe Exploration
That's
even. Ex
Yeah, that's fair. I okay, so I'm not gonna totally rule this out. I'm a little bit skeptical, but it does, have some potential.
I'd rather try to use this in Modern. I'm not gonna lie, I don't think this is a playable card. That's just my thought. In Legacy, at least, it's not
Well, you
playable.
do play Ideas Unbound.
Yeah, but that's like one deck and is a one of for a very specific like reason.
We'll see. This is my pet card. I'm gonna get Wombo Combo to start brewing right now, the Zoomers, and you'll see.
Okay. All right. Well, if Wombo's on it, I'm pretty sure we'll come up with a couple like really bad piles and then something that might work. So, if you can break it, props to you. I'll tell you that much. If you can break it, props to you. There was another draw card that was released in the set too, right? It was like the in the thirst cycle, like thirst for knowledge, thirst for meaning, thirst for whatever. It was like draw three and then you can discard a basic land.
I didn't see this
Compulsive
card.
Research. What's up? Or okay, that's a different card, but I the original is Compulsive Research, but I know what you're talking about, the new one.
Oh, yeah. So there's a new one where you can like draw three cards and then discard two or discard a basic land. That one was kind of also interesting. I don't think it's actually playable, but it is instant speed, which is a little bit nicer. And like maybe like blue white could play it, but six basics is probably not a lot. So never mind. Maybe it's just really bad. I take it back.
Yeah, sounds good in cube though.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, I agree. Okay, next card. What's the next card?
Welcoming Vampire. This is I put this here. I think it probably won't see play because Palace Jailer is a better draw engine, but this card seems pretty powerful. I guess I should start by reading it. It's white and two colorless for a 2/3 flying vampire. Whenever a creature whenever one or more creatures with power 2 or less enter the battlefield, draw a card. This triggers once a turn. It seemed like in a deck like DNT, like it like a pretty powerful draw engine. I mean, you kind of if you like if you have Aether Vial, you could go play this on turn three, Aether Vial something in, draw a card, and then every turn you draw an extra card. And like DNT doesn't have that many draw engines, but I guess they do have Palace Jailer, which is probably just better than this because you don't need to like work around it. But it kind of looks like a white Tireless Tracker to me in a way. I mean, I know there's a
Is
similar
this
card.
better or worse than Mentor of the Meek?
Well, Mentor of the Meek, you have to play one.
So this seems like way better then, right?
Well, because like it just do stuff like play this on turn three, vial something in, you instantly draw a card. And like DNT, your mana is always taxed because it's got Rishet on port, equipment, wastelands. It kind of looked like yeah, like a white Tireless Tracker to me. Like the fact that it's free is pretty powerful. But I expect they'll probably just use
Yeah.
Palace Jailer to draw more cards. But this definitely seemed like a powerful card to me.
Yeah, but then Palace Jailer, obviously, it makes the game into a fight over the Monarch, which can be risky. This card doesn't have that, and in addition, this card blocks Delver. It does not block Dragon's Rage Channeler, but it still is okay in combat.
Yeah.
I
Yeah, I
don't
don't know. I think this card has some potential in DNT.
know. I
I
can't
think
really
if
see it.
Palace Jailer wasn't legal, it would people would probably try it more too. Like the biggest downside is it's like not that great to play naked on turn three, but if you have a Vial in play, that is pretty good to play on turn three. Otherwise, you have to wait till turn four. But I guess if you have Vial and you're casting a three drop and you have more cards to play, that's probably already a good spot. So it's kind of like maximizes your best spots, and it's worse than it's not great in your worst spots.
Yeah, also worth noting if everybody's on Yorion, also Prismatic ending in the format, like the Vial scenario is going to come up a lot less. Yeah. All right,
Okay.
last card here is Erruth Tormented Prophet, one a blue and a red for a legendary human wizard. If you would draw a card, exile the top two cards of your library, and then you can play those cards this turn. So potentially is a 2/4. Potentially can double all the cards you draw. It seems, pretty powerful with something like Sylvan Library. Actually, how does it work with Sylvan Library? You don't lose any life and you just reveal six cards. Is that how it works or?
That sounds actually so insane.
If you
I was
would draw
thinking
a card.
somebody said to combo this with Breakthrough. That was the first thing that I was gonna mention. But Sylvan Library is like a playable card, and this I think it works that way, right? Because you never actually drew the card.
Also, what about
Right, and Sylvan
Brainstorm? You
Library
just
says
draw six
choose.
cards.
Yeah, and Sylvan Library says choose two cards in your hand drawn this turn. So you choose zero cards because you didn't draw them. And then for
Wait,
each of those
how does
cards.
library work with Loam? It might be the
Okay,
same.
that's a totally separate thing. We'll stay on this card. But yeah, it seems to work well with Library. It is a little bit awkward with Brainstorm because you reveal six cards, but then you put two cards from your hand on top of your deck. Basically, this card is a crazy, super turbocharged, like Ruby Storm engine if you want to add the blue. But the major problem with this card is that unlike something like Burgi, Burgi has a flip side that also isn't vulnerable to removal. This card is vulnerable to a lot of removal. Be that Plow or Blue Blast or Red Blast. And like Caracas, and like you just need to get this, and then you need to like have other stuff beyond that that has to do with drawing cards. So it's just a little bit too cute. I mean, it's absurdly powerful. I'm sure like you can get some crazy screenshots of just like drawing your entire deck if you have this out, but I just think it's just a little too cute.
My impression when I saw this card was like, if you untap with this card, like you're probably gonna win, kind of, or like you don't even need like just play this card, and then if you untap, you instantly see two cards, and then any card that you cast that's like a draw spell, it's like doubled for three mana. So.
Oh, nah, I think that's not 100% true because like you're still bottlenecked by your mana, right? Like just because you're drawing cards doesn't mean that I'm not gonna finish that thought. It's a dangerous thought.
Well,
But
you're
you have
definitely
to
playing this in a storm deck. Like, it doesn't really make sense in any other shell.
Yeah, okay, fine. I was gonna say, like, you have to actualize the advantage, you know what I mean? Like just because you have like six extra cards, like if they don't do anything or you don't cast them, that's not actually like generating an advantage, right? So I was thinking this would be really interesting in a deck that has like, I don't know, like Mox Opals and like they that sort of thing too. And then like maybe you like could play with like Galvanic Relay. Breakthrough is kind of interesting. I don't know. There's a lot of restrictions on this card that probably make it.
Yeah, it doesn't play well with Ancient Tomb, unlike Burgi. This card's much harder to cast. Like, you're probably not casting it, you know, turn one or even like turn two. You need to like, you know, do a little bit of work to get it to be cast at that turn, and then you pass the turn and it could just die. So yeah, it's just a little bit too vulnerable. Now if this card costs two mana, then that would be
sure. If it costs two mana, we'd be very upset, because it's also in blue and red. Don't forget, like, it being in blue and red is kind of dumb. Was gonna say, so I'm looking at chat right now. It says, so you draw cards with Sylvan Library. So just going back to the thing, Sylvan Library plus this card, but you replace the draw with the Exile 2 effect, and since you don't draw, you don't have to pay any life, so I guess technically that makes sense.
Yeah, so it is very good with Sylvan Library, but also, I mean, it doesn't make sense unless it's in a Storm deck, but I don't know.
Well, you play it with the Inspired Idea deck, and you put Mox Diamonds and Chromoxes in your deck.
Oh my god.
Wait a minute. He's not wrong! He's not wrong!
And you play Exploration. It's like Exploration, Mox Diamond.
Now I think where I'm losing you.
What do you mean? You have to put all the extra cards into play. So that's what Exploration is. It's one card you cast in, then you get to put more lands into play.
All right, so let us know when you've built this Mox Diamond, Sylvan Library, Exploration, Inspired Idea, Aruth deck, and I'll take a look. I think it'll be something wild.
Cool. Okay. I don't know. This one could be good. I think you have to have, like, the really right deck for it. This is a deck that would really want to have like a lot of like mana accelerants and ways to like break that sort of stuff. So maybe my first thought would be some sort of like blue red artifact storm deck, but at that point you might just want to be playing like the Epic Storm instead or something like that. So I don't know. Cool. Yeah. Do we want to wrap up with a quick overview of the showcase challenge?
Yes. And we can also talk about kind of decks we would recommend. So yeah, the first place deck is taken down by XJ Cloud. He won the showcase with Yorion, Death and Taxes, playing for Urza's Saga. I think if you know, are interested in Death and Taxes at all, I would go read his article on the MinMax blog. It's like a super detailed article about different, you know, variants of the deck, why you would play Saga, why you wouldn't play Saga, along with like a crazy detailed sideboard guide and matchup guide.
Sideboard guide? Wow.
There you go. I have a feeling like this will be, you know, probably the second most popular deck at Eternal Weekend behind, you know, obviously Blue Red Tempo or whatever. But I think this deck will be, well, maybe not the second. Maybe, you know, maybe there's going to be Jeskai Saga or something else. But this will definitely be one of the most popular decks. And honestly, it has game. Like, it has game against Delver. It has game against Control. And then, obviously, there's, you know, the 15 sideboard cards against combo plan.
All right. I'm just going to tell you this right now. I would probably play this deck before I played Delver. I don't know. I don't know. I just think, like, okay, here's what I will say, right? So let's take a look at Delver, because that's the second place deck, a.k.a. Thalai, a.k.a. Javier Dominguez, a.k.a. X-World Champion, A World Champion, second place with, like, a pretty stock build of blue-red Delver that, like, cuts a Mishra's Bauble for a Pyroblast in the main deck. Here's my problem, right? We know this deck through and through, and the reason I think Death and Taxes is so good right now is because none of these blue-red decks are even trying to beat Death and Taxes. Like, I'm going to look at Javier's sideboard. It's three Pyroblasts, so you have four in the 75, two Force of Negation, one Caracas, one Submerge, one Torpor Orb, one True Name Nemesis, two Surgical, two Meltdown, one Hydro Blast, one Court of Cunning. This deck, in a million years, will not beat Death and Taxes outside of, like, getting just, like, nut draw. I just don't see it. Like, you don't have any, like, you have Torpor Orb, which is kind of cool, but you have one copy, so it's not even, like, a consistent game plan. It's, like, I hope I draw into it kind of deal thing. And the rest of your gameplay, your primary game plan, Death and Taxes will farm that for breakfast, right? It's just, like, I feel like if you wanted to actually beat Death and Taxes, you really need to, like, take your sideboard and actually start to respect the goddamn deck, because every single event is getting beaten by Death and Taxes, and every single event, I see Death and Taxes in the top 8 beating up on Delver, right? So, like, if you're going to try and win the event, which is basically the only reason to play this, you're not playing this event to get top 8, you're playing in these Eternal Weekend events to take home the painting, right? You need to put down your stock sideboard and like you need to put down like tweaking one or two cards from the stock sideboard and actually put together a list that is like has a solid plan against death and taxes. Like, I don't see it in this one. That's my thought.
You have the Merc ties. That's the plan.
I don't think that's that great of a plan. Okay, okay, fine. So McWinsauce is saying like for the showcase challenge, you're trying to make top eight, which makes sense. Okay, fine. But for Eternal Weekend, I think it's a different thing. I think if you want to win the tournament, you're going to have to be able to beat Death and Taxes probably more than
once. I don't know if this deck can't beat DNT, though, but I haven't played enough to know. I don't know if it's that, like, Delver, like, I just feel like, I mean, I always say the same thing, but I just feel like most matchups are pretty close, and I never feel like there's anything that crazy in one direction or the other.
Well, okay, so here's the thing. All these Urza Saga decks are playing Shadow Spear, and, like, that card by itself generally erases Murktide Regent. So, you know, that's something to kind of to keep in the back of your head. I also think Death and Taxes is a lot harder to hate out now if they're playing Urza's Saga. Because, like, you know, you look at a card like Torpor Orb or something like Sulfur Elemental, like, that does nothing against Urza's Saga. So it actually is a really clean way to kind of sidestep hate. Obviously, you know, it makes you vulnerable to other, like, Urza Saga hate. Like, you know, maybe now you can bring in, like, you know, Alpine Moon or
Meltdown
against Death and Taxes and have it be reasonable. But I just think that, like, I don't even know what Delver would necessarily play to, like, you know, super swing the matchup. Like,
I know, like, for Tommy Ashton or Stanerson, when he was playing Delver a little while ago, he was claiming that he was like feeling really good against DNT because he, but I mean, obviously he's a, you know, an exceptional pilot in a way, but it's not like not every Delver player I've been hearing about has been on Struggle Street versus DNT. So I don't know if it's, maybe it struggles a bit, but I just know that some people have been playing Delver haven't been having that many issues. And Tommy was saying he was mostly just like playing Murktide, protecting it and stuff, and or just slamming Delvers and DRCs. I think, especially a four Delver list. I played four Delver last weekend, and a return to four Delvers could also help the matchup a bit. So,
oh yeah, 100%. I think that's one thing too that I think would be really worth looking into. Like the best starts you have against Death and Taxes with Delver is like something super aggressive. That's like turn one, turn two, like one drop, one drop, one drop. Right? That curve is like basically non-existent nowadays because you have only two Delver of Secrets, and then you also Raghavan like does not really count as a card against them. And then like Dragon's Rage Channel, it takes forever to flip. It's much harder to flip than Delver of Secrets. So yeah, I do agree that like actual Delver of Secrets, putting that back into your deck would make your matchup against DNT maybe a little bit better because it enables a very aggressive plan that you have really dialed down on. Like you become this sort of like Jund deck that like Death and Taxes like isn't really scary about, and then going back to like tempo roots might be better. So like I think this is something also that I didn't mention, but like if you ban Raghavan, your blue versus non-blue matchup probably gets a little bit better because Raghavan not as crazy good against non-blue as it is against blue. Okay, well, what else is in the event? What else do we see?
Honestly, let's see. It basically is a lot of blue tempo. There's a lot of actually blue-red saga. And I talked to Jarvis about this, and he likes the blue-red version more than the Jeskai version because he just felt like it had a much more stable mana base and you already, you know, had good spells to cast. So that's, you know, something to be aware of. I think the blue versions of, you know, Blue-Red Saga, they generally also have, like, you know, four Murktide Regent. So that's another, you know, they're saying, like, oh, you know, Raghavan, Murktide, and Saga, these are the busted cards. Like, we just want to play four of all of these. So it actually does make some sense to me. You just get a little bit more consistency.
Okay, yeah. The only other deck that I'm super interested in the top eight, at least, is McWinsauce's sixth place deck. It's like four color control, but it's a Yorion deck, and it's got Green Sun Zenith, and it's got black in it and no red. And yeah, I mean, like, this is the kind of deck that I'm not, like, crazy enthusiastic about, right? Because it's very creature heavy. You know, it's like, with Green Sun Zenith, you're playing cards like Ramunap Excavator, Primeval Titan, and Leovold. But one thing that I will say, it is undeniable. This is Tom's like second top eight almost in a row, I would imagine, in good events, big events. And so there's something here, and I think it's really worth looking into. I think Green Sun Zenith is actually a really good tool because if you think about like control and like where it normally is lacking, I think the Green Sun Zenith package does shore up enough of those holes, right? Like you've got access to cards like Collector Oof, you've got access to cards like Leovold. I mean, even like Primetime, being able to tutor that as like a really, really crazy win condition is not nothing. You know what I mean? So I think this deck has a lot of cool stuff going on. Oh, also, you can Green Sun Zenith for Grist. And I think that's like super cool, right? Targeted removal for Planeswalkers is a big deal. Targeted removal for like Murktide Regent is a big deal. So I think there's a lot of like value here looking at this. I'm going to be setting this list a little bit as I come towards my own conclusions for what I want to be doing with Eternal Weekend and stuff like that. But I'm pretty like impressed by this list.
Yeah, and it's not just McWinsauce. I think Kihara Works has also been putting up lots of strong results with a very similar deck. It's, you know, usually four or five colors, and it has Yorion and Green Sun Zenith and probably, you know, at least 60 of the same cards, if not more. So it definitely has been putting up results.
And I have to, like, I cannot emphasize this enough. Like, I am not the kind of player that like likes playing creatures, but like if even I am like say like, okay, there's something here. If he's winning, I'm pretty sure he was like 6-0 at some point in the event, and then just like, you know, clutched out the last two rounds to make it into top eight here. So like, I don't know. I feel like there's wisdom in looking at like what people are successful with, even if it's not necessarily something that I would like to do. And this is it. Like, I think I'll probably try to adapt whatever I can here, you know, and put it in the good old four color control pile. It's interesting to see that you don't necessarily need red to survive or make it out. I think Pyroblast is good against like the control decks, but like black will give you enough options like otherwise, like against the rest of the meta. And so already I'm wondering if maybe like, you know, going into Eternal Weekend, I just don't play red, which is a little bit crazy to think about. But like, you know, against what Delver, you can play cards like, you know, Flusterstorm and the Hydro Blast. You have like Leovold and Icewing Quaddle. There's a lot of tools here.
I'm surprised because red could give you Omnath too, but I guess no Omnath.
He did
don't
mention
need that finisher when you have all these other finishers.
He did mention that he would splash red for Pyroblast and Omnath potentially. So I don't know.
Yeah,
I think that's kind of cool.
Okay, last deck I want to talk about is the 19th place deck by Jace TMS ST. Definitely a big grinder. So they played blue, white, black, red, mid-range is what I would call it. And this deck won a challenge a few weeks back. LSV even played it in a prelim and went like 3-1. Basically, this is just what you would expect. It's a blue, white, black, red, you know, Hymn to Turok, Expressive Iteration, all the good cards kind of deck. It has a really aggressive mana base, 20 lands, into wastelands and then zero basics. I think that's basically the weakness of the deck, which is why I know Anurag would never play it.
Wait, but I'm not playing basics right now, bro. The reason I hate this deck, I tell you right now, I do not like this deck, is that from a control deck, I'll put it briefly, it just doesn't have, like, the mana is, like, super sus. Like, green at least gives you Uro to ramp and carpet to compete, but, like, this list is, like, if you get wastelanded, like, what do you even do? You don't even have life from the loam. Like, you just die.
Well, it seems like to play a Forager over Murktide. I'm a big Murktide fan, for one thing. But that's kind of minor. I mean, this is definitely a spicy list. I haven't seen something like this in a while.
I mean, I think it plays six discard spells and three Snapcaster Mages. So I was just trying to get ahead early, make sure you can't really interact with it, and then bury you in card advantage.
Murktide is a good way to beat wastelands, whereas if they wasteland you and then you just cast a Murktide with your graveyard filled up.
Okay, I guess, yeah, sure. I'm gonna say, like, the one thing that this feels like the spiritual successor to the Tomas Mar check pile deck. I'm seeing, like, his, like, signature play was to have three Inquisitions and three Hymn to Turok and then just play all the best, like, value cards. And, like, that's kind of what this deck is doing, though. I'm pretty sure Tomas did not have Wasteland in that deck and had more mana sources or whatever. I think maybe, like, when he played, like, Astrolabe in the five-color deck, there were something there. But, like, I don't know. I just feel like this mana base is exceptionally greedy, and I could see, like, getting hit by Wasteland twice and you're just out of the... You're out. You're gone.
The other thing too is, like, okay, this is a thought I just had. People aren't even playing any Veil of Summer, so you can play Hymn to Turok and Thoughtseize.
Disagree.
However, these cards are not even good. Like, I'm just thinking, like, what these cards are good against. They're good against combo, and pretty much that's it. Like, you don't want to be playing Thoughtseize if your opponent leads with a Roggevon. You don't want to necessarily be playing these cards against an Uro deck either. So it just these cards. Like, people are barely playing Veil of Summer, right? Like, control doesn't really play it. You know, combo still plays it if it's, like, you know, Omnitel or Tess. but it just like people are barely playing Veil, and these cards are just not good anymore.
I think Fire Design killed discard, bro. Like, I feel like you can get rid of every good card in your opponent's hand, and then they can just like top deck like insane
they
cards that'll
get
with ridiculous comeback
Yorion.
potential.
Just put Yorion in your hand for free.
Yeah, like weird stuff like that. You know what I mean? Like, I think discard is just like intrinsically bad because the quality of every card is just like mind blasted out of power its power level. So that's another reason why I don't think this deck really functions is because discard as a primary axis is just not really. Like, I get it, but just like, what are you trying to do? Like, hope to cheese wins off of him to Torak? Like, that's not a good plan when everybody's playing Wasteland and like Roggevon and all this sort of stuff. I mean, hey, like, you know, if you can win with it, sure, go for it. But I look at this list and I'm like, this is like everything that I do not want to be doing in Legacy with control or mid-range or whatever it is, because your mana is just like, this is like the fairest deck. Like, here's okay. I'll just like we'll probably close with this. But I feel like in Legacy, like the reason the best decks are successful is because they are in some capacity able to like abuse mana, right? They're able to create asymmetrical mana advantages, right? And so like, well, let's go through some examples, right? Like lands has like access to exploration. They play two lands a turn. Stompy has access to Ancient Tomb. They get two mana from one land. Delver has access to Daze. That's a zero mana counterspell. And you know, like that sort of stuff, right? Like even Control has access to like Uro, which like will ramp you. It's a kind of a poor excuse, but you know, the best decks right now are also playing Carpet of Flowers, and like, you know, that will ramp you a little bit as well, right? But like, it's not the best at doing it. This deck has none of that. This deck has Him to Torak, Expressive Iteration. Like, nah, this is it. Like, this is not it. There's no way you can actually pull ahead. So I think like over the course of a bunch of games, you just have to get really, really lucky to pull out ahead, and it's just not what I'm about. So yeah. Oh yeah, and think about like Death and Taxes too. They've got Aether Vial, right? So playing fair with mana is just not the move.
I mean, I guess Control also has Carpet of Flowers, but I feel like Control is pretty fair if that's like,
yeah,
you
which is
know,
why I think
your.
Control is also not like the craziest deck. I think oh no, that's why Control used to have Terminus. Terminus was how Control cheated on mana. That there we go. So
I mean, do you still play one Terminus or have you given up?
You can pry it from my cold dead hands. Cool. All right. We're going to wrap up there. A lot of discussion here. We talked about Eternal Weekend. We talked about the showcase. We talked about some spoilers. If you have any feedback, if you have anything that you are, you know, interested in hearing what our thoughts are, or if you want your voice to be heard, you know, tweet us at Elo Punters. We would love to hear what you got to say. And then before the next episode, also keep in touch. We will be asking for user questions. So that's another thing. So that's at Twitter at Elo Punters. But otherwise, you know, we'll catch you guys next time. This is Anurag Das, Bob Wong, and Daniel Gochel. See you later.
Peace.